Chapter 24. "What shall it be?" the waiter asked Ravitch. "Bring me a..." "What?" Ravitch did not answer. "I didn't understand you, sir," the waiter said. "Anything. Bring me something."
"Pernod?"
"Yes." Ravitch closed his eyes. He slowly opened them again. The man was still sitting there. This time there was no possibility of mistake. Harker was sitting at the table by the door. He was alone and was eating. A silver plate with the two halves of a langouste and a bottle of champagne in an ice bucket were on the table. A waiter was standing by the table mixing a lettuce and tomato salad. Ravitch saw all this over distinctly, as though there were a relief engraved on wax behind his eyes. He saw a signet ring with a coat of arms on a red stone when Harker took the bottle out of the ice bucket. He recognized this ring and the chubby white hand. He had seen it in the confused nightmare of methodical violence when, after collapsing beside the whipping table, he had been hurled back from unconsciousness into the glaring light, with Harker before him, carefully stepping back to protect his neat uniform from the water pouring down over Ravitch, with his chubby white hand stretched out, pointing at him, and with his soft voice declaring, "That was only the beginning. It has been nothing so far. Now will you reveal the names to us, or shall we continue? We still have many other possibilities. Your fingernails are still intact, I see." Harker looked up. He looked Ravitch straight in the eyes. Ravitch needed all his strength to remain seated. He took his glass of Pernod, took a swallow, and forced his eyes to look at the salad plate as if the preparations interested him. He did not know whether Harker had recognized him. He could feel how, in a second, his back had become completely wet. After a while he glanced at the table again. Harker was eating the langouste. He was looking at his plate. His bald head reflected the light. Ravitch looked around. The place was crowded. It was impossible to do anything. He had no weapon on him, and if he leaped at Harker, there would be 10 people to pull him back the next moment. 2 minutes later, the police. There was nothing he could do but wait and follow Harker, find out where he lived. He forced himself to smoke a cigarette and not to glance at Harker again until he had finished it. Slowly, as if he were seeking someone, he looked about. Harker had just finished his langouste. He had the napkin in his hands and was wiping his lips. He did not do it with one hand. He did it with both. He held the napkin taut and touched his lips lightly with it, first one, then the other, like a woman removing lipstick. At that instant, he looked straight at Ravitch. Ravitch let his eyes wander. He sensed that Harker was continuing to stare at him. He called the waiter and asked for another Pernod. A second waiter was busy at Harker's table now. He cleared off the remainders of the langouste, refilled the empty glass, and brought a dish with cheeses. Harker pointed at a piece of melting brie which was on a mat of straw. Ravitch smoked another cigarette. After a while, out of the corner of his eye, he again saw Harker looking at him. This was no longer accidental. He felt his skin contracting. If Harker had recognized him... He stopped the waiter as he was passing. "Can you bring the Pernod to me outside? I'd like to sit on the terrace. It's cooler there." The waiter hesitated. "It would be easier if you'd pay here. There is another waiter outside. Then I can bring your glass outside to you." Ravitch shook his head and took a bill out of his pocket. "I can drink it here and order another one outside. Then there won't be any confusion." "Very well, sir. Thank you, sir." Ravitch emptied his glass without haste. Harker had been listening, that he knew. He had stopped eating while Ravitch had been talking. Now he went on with his meal. Ravitch still kept quiet for a while. If Harker had recognized him, there was only one thing to be done: to act as if he had not recognized Harker, and to continue to watch him from hiding. After a few minutes he stood up and sauntered out. Almost every table outside was occupied. Ravitch remained standing until he found a table from which he could keep an eye on a part of Harker's table in the restaurant. Harker himself could not see him, but Ravitch would see Harker when he got up to leave. He ordered a Pernod and paid at once. He wanted to be ready to follow him immediately. "Ravitch," someone said at his side. He was startled, as if someone had struck him. Joan stood at his side. He stared at her. "Ravage," she repeated. "Don't you recognize me anymore?" "Yes, of course." His eyes were on Harker's table. The waiter was standing there and had brought coffee. He caught his breath. There was still time. "Joan," he said with an effort, "how do you happen to be here?" "What a question. Everyone comes to Fouquet's every day." "Are you alone?" "Yes." He realized that she was still standing while he was sitting. He got up in such a way that he could still look obliquely at Harker's table. "I have something to do here, Joan," he said hastily, without looking at her. "I can't explain what. You must leave me alone." "I'll wait." Joan sat down. "I'll see what the woman is like." "What woman?" Ravage asked, uncomprehendingly. "The woman you are waiting for."
"It's not a woman."
"Who else?" He looked at her. "You didn't recognize me," she said. "You want to send me away. You are excited. I know there is someone, and I'm going to see who it is."
5 minutes, Ravage thought. Perhaps even 10 or 15 for the coffee. Harker would smoke another cigarette, maybe a cigar. He had to see that he was rid of Joan by then. "All right," he said. "I can't prevent that. But sit down somewhere else." She did not answer. Her eyes became sharper and her face tense. "It isn't a woman," he said. "And if it were, what the devil business is it of yours? Don't make yourself ridiculous by acting jealous while you run around with your actor." Joan did not answer. She turned in the direction in which he had been looking and tried to discover whom he had been looking at. "Don't do that," he said.
"Is she with another man?"
Suddenly Ravage sat down. Harker had heard that he intended to sit on the terrace. If he had recognized him, he would be suspicious and see where he was. In that case, it would appear more casual and harmless to be sitting out here with a woman. "All right," he said. "You may stay here. What you are thinking is nonsense. Now I'll get up at a certain moment and leave. You'll go with me to a taxi, and you won't come along with me. Will you do that?"
"Why are you so mysterious?"
"I am not mysterious. There is a man here whom I have not seen for a long time. I want to know where he lives. That's all."
"It isn't a woman?"
"No. It is a man, and I can't tell you anything more about it." The waiter stood by the table. "What do you want to drink?" Ravage asked.
"Calvados."
"One Calvados." The waiter shuffled away.
"Aren't you going to have one?"
"No, I'm drinking this."
Joan studied him. "You don't know how I hate you sometimes."
"That may be." Ravage glanced at Harker's table. Glass, he thought. Trembling, flowing, glimmering glass. The street, the tables, the people, all immersed in a jelly of quivering glass.
"You are cold, egotistic,
Joan," Ravage said. "We'll discuss this some other time." She was silent while the waiter put the glass before her. Ravage paid at once.
"You got me into all this," she then said challengingly.
"I know." For a moment he saw Harker's hand over the table, the chubby white hand reaching for the sugar.
"You. No one but you. You have never loved me, and you played with me, and you saw that I loved you, and you did not take it seriously."
"That is true."
"What?"
"It is true," Ravage said, without looking at her. "But it became different later on."
"Yes, later. Later. Everything was upside down then. Then it was too late. It was your fault."
"I know."
"Don't talk to me like that."
Her face was white and angry.
"You're not even listening."
"I am." He looked at her. "Talk, say something, no matter what. Did you have a fight with your actor?"
"Yes."
"That will pass." Blue smoke from the corner. The waiter was pouring coffee again. Harker seemed to be taking his time.
"I could have denied it," Joan said. "I could have said I just came here by accident. I didn't. I was looking for you. I am going to leave him."
"That's what one is always going to do. It's part of it."
"I'm afraid of him. He threatens me. He wants to shoot me."
"What?" Suddenly Ravage looked up. "What was that?"
"He says he'll shoot me."
"Who?"
He had only half listened. Now he understood.
Oh, I see. You don't believe it, do you?
He has a terrible temper.
Nonsense. Whoever says such a thing never does it, least of all an actor. What am I talking about? He thought. What is all this? What does she want here? A voice, a face above the roaring in my ears. What does it matter to me? Why are you telling me all this? He asked.
I'm going to leave him. I want to come back to you.
If he takes a taxi, it will take me at least a few seconds until I can stop one, Ravitch thought. By the time it gets started, it might be too late. He got up. Wait here. I'll be back at once. What do you want? He did not answer. He crossed the street quickly and hailed a taxi. Here are 10 francs. Can you wait for me for a few minutes? I still have something to do inside. The driver looked at the money, then at Ravitch. Ravitch winked. The driver winked back. He turned the bill around slowly. That's extra, Ravitch said. You know why? I understand, the driver grinned. All right, I'll park here. Park so that you can get started immediately. All right, chief. Ravitch forced his way back through the crowd. Suddenly his throat tightened. He saw Harker standing in the doorway. He did not hear what Joan was saying. Wait, he said. Wait just a moment, 1 second.
No.
She rose. You'll regret this. She was almost sobbing. He forced himself to smile. He held her hand tight. Harker was still standing there. Sit down, Ravitch said. 1 second.
No.
Her hand strained in his grip. He let her go. He did not want a scene. She left quickly, making her way through the rows of tables close by the door. Harker followed her with his eyes. Then he slowly looked back at Ravitch, then again in the direction in which Joan had gone. Ravitch sat down. Suddenly the blood thundered in his temples. He took out his wallet and pretended to be looking for something. He noticed that Harker was slowly walking between the tables. He looked indifferently in the opposite direction. Harker had to pass the place he was looking at. He waited. It seemed to take endless time. Suddenly he was seized by a hot fear. What if Harker had turned back? He quickly turned his head. Harker was not there anymore. Not there anymore. For a moment everything turned around him.
Will you permit me?
Someone asked at his side. Ravitch did not hear. He looked at the door. Harker had not gone back into the restaurant. Jump up, he thought. Run after him. Still tried to get hold of him. Then the voice was there behind him again. He turned his head and stared. Harker had come around behind his back and was standing now beside him. He pointed at the chair on which Joan had been sitting. Will you permit me? There is no other table free. Ravitch nodded. He was unable to say anything. The blood was drained from his head. It ebbed and ebbed as if it would run under the chair and leave his body behind like an empty sack. He pressed his back close against the back of the chair. There stood his glass still in front of him, the milky fluid. He lifted it and drank. It was heavy. He looked at the glass. It was steady in his hand. The trembling was in his veins. Harker ordered a fine champagne. An old fiend champagne. He spoke French with a heavy German accent. Ravitch called a newspaper boy. Paris Soir. The newspaper boy looked cautiously toward the entrance. He knew the old newspaper woman was standing there. He handed Ravitch the newspaper, folded as though accidentally, grabbed the coin and quickly disappeared. He must have recognized me, Ravitch thought. Otherwise, why would he have come? He had not counted on that. Now he could only stay and see what Harker wanted and act accordingly. He picked up the newspaper, read the headlines, and put it back on the table. Harker looked at him. Fine evening, he said in German. Ravitch nodded. Harker smiled.
Keen eye, eh?
Apparently.
I saw you while I was still inside.
Ravitch nodded attentively and indifferently. He was strained to the utmost. He could not imagine what Harker's intentions were. The latter could not know that Ravitch was in France illegally. But maybe the Gestapo had known even that. But for that there still was time. I recognized you at once, Harker said. Ravitch looked at him. "That scar," Harker said, and pointed at Ravitch's forehead. "Member of a student corps. Therefore you must be German, or have studied in Germany." He laughed. Ravitch was still looking at him. This was impossible. It was too ridiculous. He breathed deeply in sudden relief. Harker had no idea who he was. He thought the scar on his forehead was a dueling scar. Ravitch laughed. He laughed with Harker. He had to dig his nails into the palm of his hand to make himself stop laughing. "Is that correct?" Harker asked with jovial pride. "Yes, exactly." The scar on his forehead. He had got it when they had beaten him in the cellar at Gestapo headquarters, before Harker's very eyes. Blood had run into his own eyes and mouth. And now Harker sat here, mistaking it for a dueling scar, and was proud of himself. The waiter brought Harker's fiend. Harker sniffed at it like a connoisseur. "That's one thing they have here," he declared. "Good cognac. Otherwise," he winked at Ravitch, "everything's rotten. The people of Rentier. They don't want anything but security and a good life, helpless against us." Ravitch thought he'd be unable to talk. He thought if he talked he would seize his glass, smash it against the edge of the table, and dig the sharp splinters into Harker's eyes. He took the glass carefully and with effort, emptied it, and put it quietly down again. "What is that?" Harker asked.
"Pernod, a substitute for absinthe."
"Ah, absinthe, the stuff that makes the French impotent, eh?" Harker smiled. "Pardon me, nothing personal intended."
"Absinthe is prohibited," Ravitch said. "This is a harmless substitute. Absinthe is said to make one sterile, not impotent. That's why it is prohibited. This is anise. Tastes like licorice water."
It worked, he thought. It worked, and without much excitement either. He could answer easily and smoothly. There was turmoil deep inside him, roaring and black, but the surface appeared calm.
"Do you live here?" Harker asked.
"Yes."
"Have you lived here long?"
"Always."
"I understand," Harker said. "A foreign German born here, eh?"
Ravitch nodded.
Harker drank his fiend. "Some of our best men are Germans born in foreign countries. Our Führer's deputy born in Egypt. Rosenberg in Russia. Dare comes from Argentina. It's the political conviction that counts, eh?"
"Only that," Ravitch replied.
"I thought so."
Harker's face radiated satisfaction. Then he bowed slightly across the table, and it seemed as if he clicked his heels under the table at the same time.
"By the way, permit me, von Harker."
Ravitch repeated the ceremony. "Horn." It was one of his former pseudonyms.
"Von Horn?"
Harker asked.
"Yes."
Harker nodded. He became more intimate. He had met a man of his own class.
"You must know Paris well, eh?"
"Fairly."
"I don't mean the museums."
Harker grinned like a man of the world.
"I know what you mean."
The Aryan Superman would like to go slumming and doesn't know where to go, Ravitch thought. If I could get him into a hidden corner somewhere, a lonely bistro, an out-of-the-way brothel, he deliberated quickly, some place where he wouldn't be disturbed and hindered.
"There are all sorts of interesting things here, eh?"
Harker asked.
"You haven't been in Paris long?"
"I come here every other week for 2 or 3 days, sort of a check-up, pretty important. We have built up quite a few things here during the last year. It's working out wonderfully. I can't talk about it, but..." Harker laughed. "You can buy almost anything here. A corrupt lot. We know almost everything we want to know. We don't even have to look for information. They bring it themselves. Treason as a form of patriotism. A result of the party system. Each party betrays the others and their country for their own profit. Our advantage. We have a great many friends here of our political persuasion, in the most influential circles." He lifted his glass, examined it, found it empty, and put it down again. "They don't even arm themselves. They think we won't demand anything from them if they are unarmed. If you knew the number of their planes and tanks, you would laugh yourself sick at these candidates for suicide." Ravitch listened. He was all attention, and yet everything swam around him as in a dream just before the awakening. The tables, the waiters, the sweet nocturnal commotion of life, the gliding rows of automobiles, the moon above the houses, the multicoloured electric signs on the house fronts, and the garrulous manifold murderer opposite him who had ruined his life. Two women in short tailored suits passed by. They smiled at Ravitch. It was Yvette and Marta from the Osiris. They were having their day off.
"Chic Donnerwetter," Harker said.
A side street, Ravitch thought. A narrow, empty side street. If I could get him there, or into the Bois. "Those are two ladies who live by love," he said. Harker looked after them.
"They're very good-looking. The people here know all about that, don't they?"
He ordered another fiend.
"May I offer you a drink?"
"Thanks.
I'd rather stick to this one."
"They are supposed to have fantastic brothels here, places with performances and that sort of thing." Harker's eyes glittered. They glittered as they had years ago in the stark light of the cellar. "I must not think of that," Ravitch thought, "not now."
"Have you ever been in one?" he asked.
"I have been in several, for observation, naturally, to see how low a people can sink. But surely not in the right ones. Of course, I've got to be careful. It could be wrongly interpreted." Ravitch nodded.
"You needn't be afraid of that. There are places where tourists never come."
"Do you know about them?"
"Of course. Quite a lot."
Harker drank his second fiend. He became friendlier. The inhibitions he had had in Germany fell from him. Ravitch felt that he was completely unsuspecting. "I intend to stroll about a bit tonight," he said to Harker.
"Indeed?"
"Yes. I do it now and then. One should learn everything one can."
"Right. Absolutely right."
Harker stared straight at him for a moment. "Get him drunk," Ravitch thought. "If it won't work any other way, get him drunk and drag him off somewhere." Harker's expression had changed. He was not tipsy. He was only lost in thought.
"It's a pity," he said finally. "I would have liked to come with you."
Ravitch did not reply. He wanted to avoid anything that might make Harker suspicious.
"I must go back to Berlin tonight."
Harker looked at his watch.
"In an hour and a half."
Ravitch sat there completely calm. "I must go with him," he thought. "Surely he lives in a hotel, not a private apartment. I must go with him to his room and catch him there."
"I'm just waiting here for two acquaintances of mine," Harker said. "Should be here any minute. They are travelling with me. My things are already at the station. We are going straight from here to the train."
"I've lost," Ravitch thought. "Why haven't I a gun with me? Why did I, idiot that I am, come to believe in recent months that what happened before was an hallucination? I could shoot him on the street and try to escape through a subway entrance."
"It's a pity," Harker said. "But perhaps we can make it next time. I'll be back again in 2 weeks."
Ravitch breathed again.
"All right," he said. "Where do you live? I could call you up then."
"In the Prince de Galle, just across the street."
Harker took a notebook out of his pocket and put down the address.
Ravitch looked at the elegant covers of flexible red Russian leather. The pencil was a thin gold one. What must be in there, he thought. Probably information that will lead to torture and death. Harker put his notebook back into his pocket.
"Chic woman you were talking to before," he said.
Ravitch had to think for a second.
Yes, very.
"In the movies?"
"Something of that sort."
"Good acquaintance?"
"Just that."
Harker looked straight ahead, meditatively.
"That's the difficulty here. To make the acquaintance of someone nice, one doesn't have time enough and does not have the right opportunities."
"Well, that can be arranged," Ravitch said.
"Really? You aren't interested?"
"In what?"
Harker laughed in embarrassment. "For instance, in the lady with whom you spoke."
"Not in the least."
"Donnerwetter, that wouldn't be bad. Is she French?"
"Italian, I think, and a few other races mixed in."
Harker grinned.
"Not bad. Naturally, at home we can't have that,
but here one is incognito to some extent.
Are you? Ravitch asked. Harker was taken aback for a second, then he grinned.
I understand. Of course not for those in the know, but otherwise strictly incognito. Besides, it just occurs to me, have you any contact with refugees?
Very little, Ravitch said carefully.
That's a pity. We would like to have certain, you understand, information. We even pay for it.
Harker raised his hand.
Naturally, that's out of the question in your case. Nevertheless, the smallest item of news.
Ravitch noticed that Harker went on looking at him.
It's possible, he said. You can never tell. It may happen sometime.
Harker moved his chair closer.
One of my tasks, you know. Connections from the inside to the outside. Sometimes it is difficult to get at them. We have good people working here.
He raised his eyebrows meaningfully. With us it is something else, of course. It's a matter of honour. It's the fatherland, isn't it?
Of course.
Harker looked up.
My acquaintances are arriving. He put a few notes on the china plate after he had added up the amount. It's convenient that the prices are always on the saucers. We might initiate that at home.
He stood up and extended his hand.
Auf Wiedersehen, Herr von Horn. I am very pleased to have met you. I'll call you in 2 weeks.
He smiled.
Discretion, of course.
Of course.
Don't forget.
I never forget anything. Not a face or an appointment. I can't afford to. That's my profession.
Ravitch stood before him. He felt as if he would have to push his hand through a wall of cement. Then he felt Harker's hand in his. It was small and surprisingly soft.
He stood there undecided for another moment and followed Harker with his eyes. Then he sat down again. Suddenly he felt himself trembling. After a while he paid and left. He went in the direction in which Harker had gone. Then he recalled that he had seen him and the other two step into a taxi. There would have been no point in driving after them. Harker had already checked out of his hotel. If he had happened to see him again somewhere, he would only become suspicious. He turned around and went to the Internacional.
"You were being sensible," Morozov said.
They were sitting in front of a café on the Rond-Point. Ravitch looked at his right hand. He had washed it with alcohol a number of times. He had felt foolish for doing it, but he could not help it. Now his skin was dry as parchment.
"You would have been crazy if you had tried anything," Morozov said. "Good thing you were unarmed."
"Yes," Ravitch replied without conviction.
Morozov looked at him.
"You aren't such an idiot that you want to be tried for murder or for attempted murder?"
Ravitch did not answer.
"Ravitch!"
Morozov put the bottle down hard on the table.
"Don't be a fantast."
"I am not. But can't you understand that it sickens me to have missed this opportunity? 2 hours earlier and I could have dragged him off somewhere, or could have done something else."
Morozov filled the 2 glasses.
"Drink this. Vodka. You'll get him later."
"Or not."
"You'll get him. He'll come back. That sort of fellow comes back. You've hooked him thoroughly. Prost."
Ravitch emptied his glass.
"I could still go to the guard, you know, to see whether he leaves."
"Of course. You could also try to shoot him there. 20 years in the penitentiary at least. Have you any more ideas like that?"
"Yes. I could watch to see whether he really leaves."
"And be seen by him and ruin everything."
"I should have asked him at which hotel he was staying."
"And make him suspicious."
Morozov refilled their glasses.
"Listen, Ravitch. I know you're sitting here now and thinking you've done everything wrong. Get rid of it. Smash something to bits if you feel like it, something big and not too expensive. The Palm Garden at the Internationale, for all I care."
"No point in that."
"Then talk. Talk about it until you get sick of it. Talk it out of your system. Talk yourself calm. You aren't a Russian, otherwise you would understand that."
Ravitch straightened up.
"Boris," he said, "I know rats must be exterminated and one should not get into a biting match with them, but I can't talk about it. Instead of that, I'll think about it. I'll think how I can do it. I'll prepare for it like an operation. As far as one can prepare for anything, I'll get used to it. I have 2 weeks' time. That's good. That's damned good."
I can get used to being calm. You are right. One can talk things to death and so become calm and deliberate. But one can also think things to death and attain the same end, hatred. Think it to death, coldly, purposefully. I'll kill so often in my thoughts that it will be like a habit when he returns. One acts more deliberately and calmly the thousandth time than the first time. And now let us talk, but about something else. About those roses there, if you like. Look at them. They are like snow in this sultry night, like white foam on the restless surf of the night. Are you satisfied now?
No,
Morozov said. Ravitch remained silent.
I'll be satisfied when we've talked about it 100 times,
Morozov said. All right. Take a good look at this summer, the summer of 1939. It smells of sulphur. The roses look like snow on a mass grave in the coming winter. We are a gay people in spite of it, aren't we? Long live the century of non-intervention, of the petrifaction of moral instincts. There is much killing going on tonight, Boris. Every night. Much killing. Cities are burning, dying Jews are wailing somewhere, Czechs are perishing miserably in the woods, Chinese are burning in Japanese gasoline. The whip death is creeping through concentration camps. Are we going to be sentimental women when it comes to eliminating a murderer? We'll find and exterminate him, that's all, as we have had to do often enough with innocent people who only differed from us in the uniforms they wore.
All right, Morozov said, or rather better. Have you ever learned what can be done with a knife? A knife makes no sound.
Don't bother me with that tonight. I must sleep somehow. The devil knows whether I'll be able to, in spite of my faking of being so calm. Can you understand that?
Yes.
Tonight I'll kill and kill. In 2 weeks I'll be an automaton. The problem is how I can get through that time. Through the time until I can first sleep. Getting drunk won't help. Neither would an injection. I must fall asleep exhausted. Then it will be all right next day. You understand? Morozov sat in silence for a while.
Get yourself a woman, he said then.
How could that help?
It can. It's always good to sleep with a woman. Call up Joan. She'll come.
Joan.
Yes.
She had been with him before. She had been talking about something. He had forgotten it.
I am not a Russian, Ravitch said.
Any other proposals?
Simple ones. Only the most simple ones.
Well, that was no simple one.
Good God, don't be complicated. The simplest way to tear oneself away from a woman is to sleep with her again occasionally, not to let your fantasy run wild with you. Who wants to dramatize a natural act?
Yes, Ravitch said. Who wants to?
Then let me telephone. Morozov interrupted him. I'll get you something. I'm not a doorman for nothing.
Stay here. It's all right this way. Let us drink and look at the roses. Dead faces in the full moonlight after machine gun fire can look just as white as that. Once I saw that in Spain. Heaven is an invention of the fascists, the metal worker Pablo Nona said at that time. He had only one leg. He became somewhat embittered against me because I had not preserved his other leg in alcohol. He felt as though 1/4 of him had been buried. He did not know that the dogs had stolen and eaten it.